We are very clear. We do not want the Indian internet to have something as harmful as betting, whether they are foreign platforms or Indian platforms. We have also made sure through the rules that there will be no surrogate advertising or any kind of indirect presence of these betting platforms on the Indian internet. And the IT Act and the rules are what regulate the Indian internet. So we have the rules today.
That was an emphatic soundbite from Rajiv Chandrasekhar, right? But the very day Chandrasekhar, Government of India's Minister of State for Electronics and Information Technology, took to social media to clarify that online real money games involving a prize pool are allowed under the newly notified online gaming rules, but online games where prize money is at stake on wagering or on outcomes that are beyond the control of those playing are not. Meaning, will it rain before an IPL match tomorrow? Or will Chennai win the toss on Saturday against Kolkata? Or will your favorite batsman Shikhar Dhawan hit a six in the next ball or over? I woke up to a full page ad in a national daily that screamed, greater the odds, greater the winnings. With brand ambassadors like Olympic bronze medalist Mary Kom, film stars Ranbir Kapoor, Kiara Advani, Sanjay Dutt, Indian and international cricket superstars Mithali Raj, Ian Morgan, Sunil Narayan, homegrown badminton champion Saina Nehwal, the messaging of the ad was simple. Make the best of this cricket season, meaning IPL 2023, with the most trusted platform. Interestingly though, I did not find the word bet or betting anywhere in the ad, although the word odds was mentioned. Clever copywriting, Sufficiently intrigued, I searched online for the company's film and TV spots. What I found was slick, smart, and of course, seductive commercials wooing me. Since the tagline told me to be unstoppable and a winner, I did what I was asked. Maza lele. So, I enrolled myself and sent a WhatsApp message. Want to bet? Possible? How will it work? Pop came the answer with a step-by-step tutorial on how to place a bet. I simply needed to click on the given link, register, and enjoy unlimited games. Bank details with account holder's name, number, IFSC code, or alternatively even UPI IDs were also made available immediately. They were sent to me with the promise of fast withdrawals and quick deposits processed within 5 minutes, 24/7, 365 days a year. But is this legit? I asked about the credentials of this company to my lawyer friend Jay Satya, an expert on gaming legislations in India.
Fair Play, the advertisement which you sent me, is an illegal betting platform. It's not even based in India. It is based in some offshore location like Curaçao. With the operators or the management, I'm being told, are based in Dubai. And it's an illegal betting platform. As you know, gambling and betting is illegal in most of the states. These platforms are not even registered in India, do not pay tax in India. And they try to take payments through dummy accounts or, you know, dubious accounts of either companies or individuals, not in their own company name. And then channelize this money abroad through hawala channels or through other means. So this is completely illegal. And what is going on, they are breaking probably half a dozen or dozen laws by offering these services in India, including taxation laws, FEMA, and the gambling and betting laws of each state.
Just a week back, on the 6th of April, the IMB Ministry that governs advertising, among other things, had issued its third advisory to the media companies since last June, requesting them not to carry such ads or their star-studded surrogate versions. The earlier two advisories were sent to everyone, including newspapers, digital platforms, OTTs, and even television companies. And the last one even warned of strict legal action against editors and proprietors of media groups who would still carry these advertisements. Clearly, no one seems to be listening.
Some of these brands actually use, surrogate names or platforms. So let's say Fairplay News or Parimatch News or a blog.
मैं क्या हूँ, क्यों हूँ, फर्क नहीं पड़ता. सूरत कैसी है, अकल कितनी.
मत सोच.
अगर टैलेंट है, तो खेल जा. कोशिश के पहले हार मत. सामने कौन है, सोच मत.
What baffles me the most then are the brand ambassadors that the companies have in their rosters. Olympians, top film stars, top sportsmen. I mean, are these people naive? Do they not know about the law of the land?
Probably they are doing it with their eyes fully open because the money is too good, right? So that is a short answer to your question. And Consumer Affairs Ministry has also issued certain guidelines very recently saying that no celebrity or endorser should advertise or promote any illegal brand or product, including surrogates. That's also mentioned.
Use your skills to predict and win big. Sign up now for benefits up to 8,000.
And the CCPA, Central Consumer Protection Authority, recently issued notices to 3 or 4 such celebrities which you mentioned.
You talked about a very interesting point, which is surrogacy. Because when I looked deeper, I saw that they offer a variety of services and offerings. So I wanted to ask you, is their entire operations illegal? Because as you said, they have news, Fair Play News. They have online casino games, fantasy leagues, as well as online dice games like 7 Up or Down, card games like poker, Andar Bahar. So is everything that they do illegal or only some?
You forgot the biggest one from which they make money, which is cricket betting.
Okay.
And IPL is their biggest season, which is why they are doing this with impunity, because these 2 months, they probably make the maximum money, which they won't make in the next 10 months.
Correct.
So they are ready to take that risk.
But as I said, all their operations illegal or only parts of their operations are illegal?
I would just answer it in this way, saying all their offerings or all their services are illegal and breaking some law or the other. But probably some services are breaking more number of laws. If it's a game of chance they are offering, they are breaking state gambling laws in addition to foreign exchange and tax laws as well.
Okay.
So if they are offering fantasy games, then they are probably just breaking tax laws and foreign exchange laws. There are 6 or 7 reasons why they're illegal. One is the taxes. Mm. Second is the foreign exchange and the money laundering laws, where they're channelizing the money through some other channels, through some other dubious entities outside India. So there is the foreign exchange and money laundering angle. Third is the misleading advertisements, which is breaking the consumer protection laws. Fourth is offering the gambling betting service themselves, which they are breaking the gambling and betting laws. Fifth is probably the Indian Penal Code. They are cheating and misleading the customers. So that is there. So, these are some of the laws off the top of my head. There would be probably more that they are breaking.
Yes. And in fact, our journalists wrote a story some days back that the government has identified 38 such portals that haven't paid GST. And the evasion is estimated to be 12,000 crore rupees. That's a mind-boggling sum. The Ministry of Home...
But I won't be surprised if during the investigation, the number goes up even higher.
Now, the MHA, the Ministry of Home Affairs, banned several URLs, yet some new URLs prop up the very next day. Last week itself, there were raids allegedly against this company called Parimatch, which is based in Cyprus, for running online gaming and gambling. The company, of course, denied it. However, their CEO, in an interview on record, has said his company alone does monthly deposits of $1 billion from India in 1 month. That's $12 billion in a year. So we are actually talking of humongous sums of money, no taxes being paid.
And the money is leaving India. So the economy is also getting affected.
True.
So it's a huge matter of concern. So it's a menace. And just one thing on the domain names.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, 138 domain names of these, a lot of them were betting and gambling offshore, these websites were blocked by the Ministry of IT on advice of the Home Ministry, as you correctly said. However, in a couple of hours, these websites were up by a different name. Not even a different name, just changing the extension. Let's say .com was banned, the .com extension of the website. They just started .in or .org, and they are operating. These are called mirror sites, mirror websites. So they are operating as normal, and they just informed all their users that we have just changed their domain name from so-and-so to so-and-so.
Correct.
So although the government is acting on various fronts, but much more vigilance and stricter action and monitoring is required, I would say.
Understood. Rajiv Chandrasekhar, a former telecom tycoon from the early 2000s turned BJP Neta, who is well aware of the fractious relationship between the state and private enterprises, is now, as a minister, trying to play referee in another equally high-stakes match involving a sector that is perceived to be a problem child to many and therefore has often been at loggerheads with the taxman, regulators, politicians, and the policymakers. That's online gaming. And last week, he tried to bring in some semblance of sanity by notifying new rules, baby steps that the online gaming gang are calling path-breaking. From the Economic Times, I am your host, Arijit Barman, and this is the business of sports. Considering the numerous stakeholders, we decided to split the episode into two parts to go deeper into the significance of the new online gaming notifications with one of the founders of gaming company Games24/7, examine the fine print and legal veracity with Jay, as well as delve into the politics of online gaming in this election season with a retired judge from Tamil Nadu, whose recommendations have led the state pass a new law to completely ban online games. We even talked to a special guest who joins us from London, Sarah Ramanauskas, who works closely with gaming commissions and global betting and gambling companies around the world to make them responsible and safe, to talk about how and why are various governments trying to legalize betting and decriminalize gambling by making them more mainstream through strict regulations and policing. We're calling this episode Online Gameplay, Center versus the State and the Thriving Illegals.
This is the business of sports. Business of sports. From the Economic Times.
Our whole objective is not to be policing the online gaming, but certainly to regulate one small sliver of it. And we want the online gaming ecosystem to grow rapidly to being a multi-billion dollar ecosystem over the next coming years. But very clearly, it is also clear from the industry and indeed all stakeholders that they don't want government too deeply involved in this innovation ecosystem, and that has been the direction from our Honorable PM as well. So we have created these institutions like called the SROs, which will be built around the stakeholders of the gaming industry, including but not limited to industry, and they will be based on the principles that the government has laid down on permissibility of non-wagering, user harm, and addictive behavior of games, using those basic principles, they will create the capability and capacity to be able to scrutinize online gaming and certify them.
That's the biggest import of the new online gaming regulations. Directionally right, or much more than that? I decided to lean on to Trivikraman Thampi, aka Vikram, CEO, founder, Games24/7, to figure out how big a deal this really is. It's not every day that we have a PhD in economics from NYU, who also has a bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering from Indian Institute of Technology, Bombay, but eventually started an online gaming unicorn on our show, all the way from Miami, Florida, where he is based out of.
I mean, I think it's hard to overstate how big a deal this is. I think we have constantly been plagued by regulatory issues, lack of clarity on the regulatory side. And so it's a huge positive step in our view, and gives us that much needed clarity, which is, you know, going to boost investor confidence. It's definitely going to create more startups in the space, more innovation, more growth. It's really a big milestone, a landmark event.
Let's break it down and first address the issue of the SROs, the self-regulatory organizations. Isn't there an inherent conflict of interest in the whole architecture vis-a-vis, say, for example, IP security?
As far as I understand the composition of the SRBs, the self-regulatory bodies, the board members of the SRB, which are the ones who will approve any particular game as a permissible online game, has to be independent, at an arm's length from the industry. I don't think you're not going to find me or somebody else from the industry who's an operator actually sitting on that board. Also, what I understand is that as a first step in terms of you being able to launch your content, your new game out there, the requirements are fairly light touch. My sense is that an operator won't have to reveal much about their new game until it's pretty much at around launch time, because the early registration is supposed to be very quick and then you have a few months to get your game approved.
That's an important clarification. The other concern, the SROs will be funded by the gaming companies themselves. So will they truly be independent?
You're absolutely right about that. But then again, I kind of go back to my earlier answer. The board's supposed to be independent and the board members will be vetted by METI. So some operators in the industry will go to METI and say, hey, this is the SRB we have created. This is the governance structure for the SRB. These are its rules. This is its code of conduct. And these are the members who will be sitting on the board. So I think through the rules, they've put in enough checks and balances to ensure, in Mr. Chandrasekhar's words, that the industry will have representation at the SRB. But by no means, and these are his words, will they allow the industry to dominate the SRB. I think it finds a good balance between consumer protection and what the industry needs, you know, in terms of regulatory structure to grow.
Right. But the very fact that the METI has not addressed what is game of skill and what is game of chance, are you happy with that?
My sense is that under the existing rules, as they've been spelled out, it would be difficult for operators to run games of chance.
True. But immediately after the clarifications or the new rules were put in place, Tamil Nadu came up with a new law. So there's worry that other states might also join the bandwagon. Are we not, therefore, taking one step forward, perhaps two steps back?
Well, to the extent that METI rules are of national significance and, you know, the rules are coming from the central government, I would again take the glass half full approach and say, we're taking two steps forward and maybe one step back.
You're certainly a pragmatic entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But here's a serious question. Several politicians, bureaucrats, policymakers, some members of civil society feel there's a direct correlation between addiction, suicide, and gambling. Some may say there's some truth to it, but some would also say it's very simplistic and naive to draw a direct correlation.
Here's the thing, right? And I always say this. I think overconsumption, overindulgence is a problem with anything. There are multiple reports being published which have said that, you know, you cannot go from correlation or coincidence to causation. This doesn't mean that, you know, that the industry and the SRBs and the regulator, which is now METI, you know, don't need to worry about, as I said, overconsumption or player protection.
Yeah.
You know, responsible playing. I think all of that is very important. But I think if you look at the rules, It is really one of the important pillars of the rules. Like, they do want strong consumer protection in place. They want KYC. They want age gating. User harm has been explicitly spelled out as a problem. They've clearly spelled out what they want in terms of responsible player protection measures, like providing them time limits, money limits, showing warnings at them if they're playing for too long. So these are all things that need to be done.
True. Now, as a company and as part of the industry, what are these various tech interventions your company, the industry per se, has done to curtail the addictive impact on children and adults, as well as the potential financial liabilities on families?
We've invested tremendously on the data science and AI side. I mean, our data science AI team has grown 8x over the last 5 years. And there's a part of the data science team that is allocated just for this. Like, we want to build tools. We have been building tools. We have built tools that try to identify players who are moving on that path of overconsumption even before they get there. And once we identify these players, once these players are flagged by such a system, they actually have to mandatorily go through a survey that's designed by a professional psychologist. And based on the survey responses, and based on whatever our AI models are telling us, these players are then potentially recommended to counselors who we pay for.
I've noticed one thing, which is that three games, Rummy, Poker, and Fantasy, seems to be the favorite whipping boys of the policymakers or our politicians. How big are these, Rummy, Poker, and Fantasy, for a gaming company's operating income? I was looking at your financial data, which is available in ROC. Almost a lion's share of your operating income comes from Rummy and Fantasy. Is it reflective of the industry as well?
They're definitely the two largest games in the market. You know, I mean, I think publicly available data, but, you know, close to 60% of the gaming market in India is the skill gaming market. And I would say that's, you know, a significant majority of that skill gaming market, and overwhelming majority is Rummy and Fantasy. So that's certainly indicative of the market, I would say. Like, I mean, I think what's happened with central government is exactly the opposite of, you know, being whipped. I think we honestly feel, especially in terms of the public meetings that the Honorable Minister, you know, Rajiv Chandrasekhar has had, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this, but we feel more like we've been hugged rather than whipped, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then you're right. Like, there are problems at the state level, and, you know, one step at a time.
You live in Miami, which is in US. Now, I'm going to ask you directly, state after state after state in the US are legalizing online gaming, betting, gambling. Do you think ideally India too should make gambling mainstream, allowing it, but making it under license and stringent regime, instead of pushing the whole gig underground by outrightly saying, ban this, ban that? That only would lead to revenue loss, but also expose gamers to far graver consequences and make them vulnerable to fly-by-night operators?
I think I'll answer that question in two parts. One is that betting and gambling, unlike games of skill, do not enjoy constitutional protection. They're not protected under Article 19(1)(z).
Mm-hmm.
This obviously doesn't mean that states cannot allow it. They can. But, you know, in my view, just like in the US, that has to be a democratic process.
Right.
Like, it's the people of the country, you know, through their democratically elected representatives that have to decide that.
True.
Now, what I can say is that, and this has been at least our presentation, our argument to both the central government and the state governments, is that lack of clarity, and this particularly in the case of games of skill or banning games of skill,
mm-hmm.
you know, which some of the states have done, certainly doesn't help. It does exactly what you talked about. It creates a triple whammy kind of a situation. One, you know, consumers are exposed to unscrupulous operators, many of whom are offshore.
Yeah.
And this means that the domestic industry gets hurt. So I think as a principle, I would say regulation is always, you know, almost always better than bans.
Vikram's pragmatism has had no impact on the head of Tamil Nadu's panel on online gaming, retired Madras High Court Judge Justice K. Chandru, for whom a complete ban and not regulation is the only winning formula. On cue, based on the Chandru Committee report, last Monday, the DMK-led Tamil Nadu government received its governor's approval for a bill banning online gambling completely. Just one business day after the centre notified fresh rules for online gaming. My colleague and Morning Brief's co-host Dia Reki spoke to the retired judge to find out what's his beef with gaming and isn't there an inherent hypocrisy in his findings.
In your report, based on which the Tamil Nadu government passed a bill, you have mentioned the need to ban certain games of chance and regulate other real money games. Right?
Yes.
So in the list of games that of chance that you have asked to ban, those include two in particular, poker and rummy. Why these two? And are you looking to add more to these two names?
It is not our intention only to pick on two games alone. The government has constituted the committee only to go into the question of online gaming bordering on gambling and also resulting in a lot of loss and human lives. Therefore, they want to study on this issue of online game with more particular emphasis on the rummy and poker. When we want to suggest something, a new legislation, we would like to steer clear of the previous controversies and try to say that the rummy as played in online is not as much as playing in person. The game stops when you do not play against another person sitting on the other side. But it's a programmed game where the programs are all not very transparent and being controlled by commercial institutions. And also, at times, their sister companies chopping in with the financial aid also in between. They try to induce parties to part with more amount by continue to lose the game. Therefore, our brief was very limited. And then within the limited brief, we were able to concentrate and recommend banning of rummy. The question is whether the state legislature has the power to regulate and, if necessary, to ban. It is the investigation which we have done. Is one is the kind of program which is being used on the how companies trying to hide any kind of a transparency on the algorithm developed by them. And then how far in other countries also similar problems are facing. The other issue is a psychological issue where there have been several FIRs and recorded by police from different parts of the state where the statements and also the psychologist's input to see how much people are induced to play this gamble. It's not a game anymore. It's not a skin at all. How the judges have understood it is different from what is the ground reality.
Can you explain a little bit more between what the judges have understood and what the ground reality is based off of your report?
There are two things. One is that this so-called regulation, which has been touted even during our committee meeting, some of the companies sent representation, you should be regulated and not stopped. These are all unconvincing because in a country like, a vast country like this, where inducement is easier and there can never be regulated. Therefore, we went into the last option of banning it. How far it will become successful is question of depending on the enforcement of the law. And there is always scope for, there's nothing like a be-all and end-all. It could be improved and amendments could be brought into the loopholes plugged also.
Right. So when we're speaking about these games in particular, that is Rummy and poker, when the High Court of Madras was turning down the previous ordinance, they had recognized them as games of skill and said it cannot be banned. So how did we end up at this position then? Can you just explain a little bit about...
The exposure of judges in three high courts, they are very limited. Now the judges are not for a moment even thought that they will not be playing a game with somebody else, some other human being, and it will be transparent. They never even conceived that the programs were already fixed and people are hooked into playing this game. And some of the experiences which we are able to recollect from the affected people were that in the first two games, people make some small victories and then they were lured. While the game was on, there are communication. Even today, when we are submitting the report, I am getting several messages from these companies. 2,000 rupees is already credited. You can play without money. All this inducement, which is never thought of by the court and never even put before the court. And even Madras High Court, in fact, went to the extent of saying the number of deaths that has been pleaded by the state government is not very convincing. But do they think that it depends upon the proportionate rate of death? Even one death is a material for a state government to bring a law. The three judgments, which confined itself only to entry 34 of list 2 and gaming. The gaming also include betting also there, the other part of the entry 34. We are not on that. We have steered clear of all the three judgments of the three high courts in South India. And incidentally, all the three judgments are under appeal before the Supreme Court. And Supreme Court has granted leave to hear those matters. Ultimately, if they hear and decide that this could be banned with the existing law, there is no problem at all. But this is the second line of defense where there is a public order and public health, and therefore the state can ban such a game within the power of a state legislature. It is in that sense that the previous three judgments are not standing in the way of the state making a new law. Ultimately, whether Supreme Court or High Court, they'll have to go took into the ground reality and not make some theoretical assumptions.
Don't you feel banning will only push the entire ecosystem underground, where people will start getting exposed to fly-by-night operators, spurious operators, who can cause more damage actually? So, is that a concern at all for you?
The question is whether after ban matters will go underground. It's true of any ban for that matter, whether it is obscene literature or a blue film or a lottery sale, everything, or even a prohibition. The fact that it will go underground or the fact that it will be elusive is not up for legislature to think twice, saying that they cannot exercise the power. I think nothing is going to end with Rajbhavan. It has to go to High Court and Supreme Court, and then the battle will continue. I am sure that the court will also realize not to enter into any quibbling over the real meaning of the word skill or a chance and things like that. And they'll come to the ground reality of a digital cheating where people are lured to play more and more and lose heavily with a little saving that they have in their hand.
If addiction is the issue and it boils down to that, then shouldn't we have a similar stance on, say, alcohol or cigarettes and so on? Or what is the distinction you make between that and this?
It is not a question of temperance or a law of strict dry laws being applied. I'm not saying that, because even in India, you will find Gujaratis having prohibition, but neighboring Maharashtra do not have. And then liberal bar licensing in Karnataka, but not so much in Tamil Nadu. All that is there. I am not on a question is alcohol, tobacco, and every addiction has to be stopped only because online drug is being there. I am only saying in the digital world, if there are new methods of cheating, in fact, I remember when the chit fund companies were sought to be regulated by the Tamil Nadu legislature, as a sitting in a bench, I have appealed the law. Matter went to Supreme Court, and Supreme Court said, when the cheats are going to innovate new methods of cheating the public, the legislature also has to come out with an innovative method of stopping it. There must be a certain amount of self-restraint in matters of addiction and other things. But doesn't mean you just throw your hands in despair and say, I can't do anything.
When it comes to, you know, indigenous sports, like some that are part of our culture, whether it is Jallikattu in TN or boat races in Kerala and so on, there is always some amount of betting involved. So why is it that this form of, you know, online games is more nefarious than others?
I am only saying in traditional games like Jallikattu or Dahi Handi or boat race, there is a amount of incentives could have been there for the person winning team. That means every sport also has got a prize, and sometimes the prize money goes up and the keenness also increases to compete and win the game. That is not the issue today. Today's issue is slightly different. I am only saying this is something which is never anticipated. Now, I am only saying, suppose Jallikattu, why should they abolish Jallikattu? It has been there quite some time. Certain amount of safeguards can be provided, which I think the legislation and the government is having certain amount of control. But there is, it is inappropriate to compare that with an air-conditioned room or having some digital equipment to play some game against a machine and trying to attempt to gain some amount. This is like a fraud. A fraud is different from a risky game. I don't think it's open to the online companies to say that they are doing some very pious job. Their only job is to lure people to lose more money so that their coffers are fattened. Now, it is that sense, if there is going to be a human lives issue involved, people end their life for no reason, or they are not firm enough to live further to fight. Now, this inducement coming from a multinational or an organized group, the state is faced with such a situation. I think they have come in favor of the people to stop this game. And once you say the game is banned, there is a certain amount of guilt also comes in, because there are good one, the one who law-abiding, they may not play the game. Or those who are wanting to run the game, thinking that it is no longer a legal method to play, they may stop it. Doesn't mean it is out to change the society or reform the players or trying to regulate the company. It's not like that at all. In a given situation, the state responds to a situation and it is bona fide. But the response of the companies or the response of the central government or the response of the governor is not the same bona fide we can assert. It could be a different agenda, which they have not revealed. It is easy to guess such kind of agenda, because the amount of money that has been pumped in, even today, the central government has announced GST of 28%. Trying to lure the state government, the amount of money they may get by running the game. These are all very cheap tactics which the government is playing. Instead of encouraging a state government to fully support them to stop the loss of lives, this kind of a one-upmanship is very wrong. Even the regulation framed by the central government does not meet the real issue. Trying to regulate means trying to pass on the game with more whatever they are trying to push. I do not think that the central government acting bona fide in this matter.
So the gaming companies are stoked. On the other hand, politicians in Tamil Nadu are looking to stub out what they argue are potentially dangerous flames. But the degree of the state censure powers are yet to be tested in the apex court, which is considering appeals against judgments delivered last year by the Madras and Karnataka High Courts. In the middle of all this, a thriving online gaming space poised to become an almost $9 billion industry in the next 4 years, as per Lumikai, a specialized venture capital fund, are trying to wriggle out between a rock and a hard place. That's a wrap for now of the first part. In the second installment, Jay Satya pinpoints the gaping holes even in the new gaming norms.
I think the praises are misconceived also to an extent. Rules cannot exceed the power given to it by Parliament. The Parliament has not given the central government powers to regulate online gaming platforms. I think the process could have been more transparent and more communicative for sure.
We also head across to the United Kingdom to speak to Sarah, who tells us how the regulation has to catch up to make sure it's a win-win for both gamers and the government.
The genie is out of the bottle. You can't put that back. So to try and simply ban gambling is an impossible task. Licensing ensures that the tax revenue is collected regularly. The last time I looked, I think it was in the region of £6 to £7 billion, only slightly less than the amount given in by beer. I have been concerned, really very concerned, about the fact there is no regulation in India. Mm-hmm. And I can see problems that are being done by forcing players to go offshore.
You can catch those candid conversations this coming Tuesday on ET's flagship news podcast, The Morning Brief, on your favorite podcast platform. I'm Arijit Barman, and this is the Business of Sports. You can catch us again on the 1st of May for this fortnightly podcast where we get you all the action on and off the field from the business of sports. Drop us a comment if you like the show and follow us so that we can keep you notified as our episodes drop. As we wrap up, a big shout out to Indraneel Bhattacharya and Rajesh Nayak, our sound engineers, and show producer Vinay Joshi. Executive producer Anupriya Nair. Thank you for listening in. Business of Sports is now streaming on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Spotify, JioSaavn, apart from the Economic Times website and, of course, ET Play, the Economic Times' very own audio platform. All clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credits mentioned in the description.